This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, our special guest is Jay DeSima. Jay is a very experienced investor with nearly 50 years of experience. Since 1977, he has specialized in fixing up ugly houses and small apartment buildings. Jay is also a successful career changer, having worked for over 20 years for the telephone company before switching to full-time real estate investing in 1979. Today, Jay spends the majority of his time managing and overseeing his investment houses and training others who wish to pursue this lucrative profession. You brought up something very interesting, that you're buying for your customer, because I remember being in an apartment renter for maybe the first 6 months of my married life, and my whole goal was to get out of there. And so Yes. You've kind of enforced that you're trying to buy a product that somebody might actually want to stay in for a long time.
Yes. Or as long as I can get, you know, these customers, quite frankly, they have made me very well off over the years. These guys that paid $400 and $600 and now up to $700 and $800, you know, in Reading, these guys have made me very well off. I owe those people a lot, I'll tell you, in my life. So, but let me tell you how the apartment thing works with the young. I rent to the two groups, the young people, that's who goes to apartments, and the seniors may get stuffed in there, but they don't necessarily like it. You got lots of restrictions. If I see your car not parking in space 16, you know, I give you a ticket from the management and I harass you. Young people, singles, got a nice swimming pool, got all the amenities, got a laundry room. Everybody's, it's kind of like barracks at Fort Ordo. They're all right next door to each other. And what happens is young people, they get out of school and they go to these apartments. They're easier to get into. And but what happens is the first time a boy and a girl meet at the apartments and become serious boyfriend, girlfriend, and maybe even get married, the woman sees her boyfriend looking down at the pool with the bikinis around the pool in the summertime. She says, "We got to get out of this place. We got to get out of here." And off they go, and they rent one of my little 700 square feet, two bedroom, older detached house. Of course, you know, it may be a little crooked on the foundation. Nobody's ever asked me about that. Nobody cares. I even have 10. I go back a long ways with some of these properties to where they had, you may not remember or never maybe seen this, corrugated metal tin on a pitch roof.
No, I missed out on that phase.
You've missed out. So I don't have many of those, but I've had them. And so, you know, I had a young girl. She looked up at the roof. She says, "What kind of roof is that?" I said, "Well, I said, they don't make these anymore. This is a corrugated tin roof." And of course, I have it painted. But I said, "This is really a great roof." And I said, "You're going to love living here. I can't tell you how romantic this place is when it rains on that roof." And there has to be a little BS in your marketing, you know. So, but anyway, these older places, and the kids come to these places, and then when they have the little baby Gomer, they want a little fenced yard. They want privacy. They don't want to live next door to the singles in the apartment. So if you were to watch them, there's almost a trail. When you see this happen, they go to the apartments, which are a little cheaper because, you know, a 200-unit apartment under one roof, they can rent them cheaper. That's the concept. I can rent right about at the apartment rents with my older houses, because I bought them right, and my older houses will rent 10 to 1 for the very, very reason you just stated at the outset. You don't want to live in one. and neither do I. I will if I have to, but the minute you give me a little private place, I don't care if your building is older, as long as it's clean, kept up, and livable, I prefer your house. And so does the rest of the people in the world, by the way. And that's the way it works.
How did you usually find the properties that you bought? Were they in the MLS, or did you drive around looking for specific product type?
I initiated. No, they are not. And I teach people, get away from a computer, you know, if you're looking for these type. Most of these type, they make money. You seldom do you see them in the, there's not many of these things in the MLS. There's fourplexes that can be financed by a bank. You'll see those in the MLS. But you rarely see these older type like I'm talking about. You more or less have to, if you've got some, say, a broker salesperson working for you, people who sell may come into a real estate office. Naturally, they're the eyes and the ears of the business. So you need somebody on your side in a brokerage house to help. But most of my stuff I've initiated by making trips out in the field and in a town like my town is less than 100,000. So I know the town east, west, north, and south. And I would drive, I would make little sketches of properties I would like to own. They weren't for sale, but if they ever were, I'd like to own them. And I would draw little boxes there on a yellow sheet for houses, put the addresses down and about what I thought the rents were. I wouldn't bother anybody, did this from the car. And I had all these sketches all over. You'd be surprised when one of these comes up for sale, I would hear about it, and I've got a sketch on it. Give me a little jump on it. But I would then do what real estate agents do, not calling, but writing letters. Now, I would not write vast amounts out to everybody like you hear being said sometimes by these seminar guys, mailing letters to everyone in town. I didn't do that. I would only write letters to where I thought I stood a chance of maybe striking a deal. Now, what would give me clues? What would give me clues when I drive around my town and I continually see each time out a property going downhill, more junk cars parked in front of it, deadbeat tenants hanging out the window full of tattoos? These are all signs that that property could be out of control. And then when I see C21 as a manager, you know, these managers don't do much about stuff like this. So when I see it's managed, and then a key item is an out-of-town, when I look it up, you can look them up, you know, go down the county and look. Nowadays, all this is modernized. Now you can look this stuff up nowadays. But I used to go to the county, find out the owner that where the tax bill was sent, and get a telephone number and put a bug in their ear. I would not hit them up for sale. My gimmick back in my early years was something like this. You know, I'm a fixer type guy in Reading where you have your property out on East Street. And, you know, the reason I called you, I can't help notice on, you know, your property is, you know, there's got to be something wrong. And, you know, it must be the tenants because I've had tenants like this, you know, and they've just ruined some of my properties, just totally ruined them. And I have a little fix-up crew, and I just wonder if I could be of some service to you. That's kind of the way I introduced it.
Okay.
And then if they say, well, you know, Jay, what we really like to do is sell it, but nobody will buy it. We've seen that thing. You know, it's a mess. You know, nobody would ever look at it and buy it. Or I said, well, you know, I'm kind of in that same business myself. Maybe you and I could, you know, and I have the fix-up crew and whatnot. I'm kind of in that business. And, you know, if you would entertain an offer, you and I, maybe we could do some business together. And usually you'll find a couple, you know, these type of properties, 6, 7, 8 units, two or three vacancies. That means the owner's draw, he's lucky to pay the debt if it's got a mortgage on it. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And by the time the property management gets through with him, you know, 20% to 30%, you know, out of the income, there's nothing left. The owner's draw is probably negative. So that's the kind of a deal I approach. And those people are pretty open to an offer. Then if I, once in a while, I run into one that says, well, yeah, we'd be interested in seeing what kind of work you do. Maybe we'll hire your crew. Now, I really didn't like that part. So what I would do, I said, well, fine. I have a property at the end of West Street. Go down, take a look at it. And there's another one over on 34th. And I would give them, and these were all gussied up, had nice little picket fences. They liked it really well. They said, well, you know, we'd like to do that to ours. I'd give them an estimate, you know, about double the cost, of course, because I don't want the job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking to buy.
Now, the type of, since you kind of located a kind of property that you mentioned isn't easily financed, and now you've located the guy that's motivated. So how easy was it to convert them to you're going to carry the paper and not get a big check?
There's two things that, first of all, I should say that I have all of the sellers I need arising from two situations. The first situation is older owners who've owned the property many, many years. They get old. They can't tear. Maybe one of them dies. And so I get word of that. That will usually be through a broker, because if it's a woman left, she'll contact, you know, Coldwell Bank or somewhere. So I'm ready to go on something of that sort. With a older property, of course, going to the bank, that would represent a commercial loan. And, you know, commercial loans are for Trump Towers, not six junky units out on the street. So there's no money. There's no money. So and the other situation is where a person buys the kind of property I'm talking about and finds out after 3 or 4 years he cannot. He's a lousy landlord. He's in fights with the tenants all the time, and he can't manage. Now, see, management goes with what I do. You have to be a good landlord, and I am a good landlord. So you have to be that, and you develop that over time. Now, those are the two buying situations. When you the one situation there where it's a property going downhill, that's fairly easy to convert over and make this sell with a seller caring, because it's a matter of, does he like what I offer better than what he has today? Okay. That's all you got to answer. So, yes, I can do deals that way, offer him something, and if some extra security is needed on one of these deals, safety for the old folks is paramount, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to move up to Oregon, and they're going to buy a double wide and hang out over the ocean, and they're not coming back. So safety is something that they must have. So I've got to convince them, and you got to meet with people. You can't do this stuff on computers or iPhones, and people, you know, I have this difficulty trying to get this through when I teach myself, is you got to get out and talk to people. They want to look in your eyes. I will not carry paper for you or anybody else unless you sit down at my kitchen table, and we'll talk about your Aunt Mimi. We'll talk about the horses you bought for the kids. and I will size you up and decide whether you're an honest man. This is what we do. Mm-hmm. This is how we tell. It's the vibes that we're looking for here. You can't do that with electronics, can you?
No.
So you got to make them safe. Now, one of my easy ways to make them safe is to give them additional collateral. Give them a little deed on something I own with a lot of equity. And then I can explain, you know I'm not paying you much down, and you're carrying the paper here for me. But here's the deal. If something goes sour, I'll put a $50,000 trust deed on these nice units over here where I only owe, you know, $40,000, and these things are worth $400,000. And they drive by, sure as heck, yeah, these are worth a lot. I give them that deed, and I generally draw it up in such a way that after we've been together and I've made my payments on time faithfully for 5 years, 60 months, they'll release or at least give me a partial recon if I need it.
Okay.
And I can generally work with that pretty well. But that takes meeting with them and discussing and showing them. Now, the realtors will ruin this if they get in the mix. Because what they will say, particularly the old folks who you know, represents, you know, a lot of my buys. And they'll say, well, you know, why should you finance Jay's deal? You know, Jay needs to come in with the money himself. You're going to move away. You know, what if something goes wrong and you're financing? You know, you don't know Jay. So this is how they talk. And they're doing that to protect their client, right?
Well, they're doing it to protect their commissions, too.
Well, yes, but no, I'm assuming the commission is already.
Oh, okay.
That's already taken care of, no. But they fiduciary responsibility, the customer on, you know, warning about, you know. And so, but I make special deals. I, for example, I have a set of financial documents, P&Ls, and a statement, and also my properties and the mortgages. And I will tell them that if they will, if they're considering financing with me, what I'll do is let them sit at the escrow in the conference room. I'll bring my financials over, where I even have the names of a lot of private mortgages I pay with the phone numbers on. I say, you can sit here all day, call anybody you want, and check me out.
Okay, fair enough.
And so I always tell them that. Now, a lot of times, there's this situation where the realtor, again, gets back in the mix or something. I'm just making these numbers up. But let's say there was $100,000 carry back or something I'm asking for. The realtor says, you're better off to get the $100 and put it in the bank, and then you've got it safe. And so, you know, I need to get in the mix and talk to these people. And I found out, and I do find out when I talk to them, that what they want is, they want a little extra income. They've got a railroad pension and Social Security, but they figure if they put the $100, they got this $100,000, and they draw an extra $700 a month. That's just going to fix them up just grand.
Mm-hmm.
And so the realtor says, let's just stick it in the bank in one of these accounts where you can draw down. Well, those accounts pay no interest at all, maybe 0.3 or some damn thing, but hardly nothing. So I like to meet with them and talk to them. And I said, well, you got any idea if, you know, I know your broker recommended that you put your money in the bank, get it all. Do you have any idea that if you draw $700 a month out of that account, how long it will last you? And, of course, they throw both arms up in the air, and they don't. And I said, well, just, you know, let me tell you. He's going, you know, it's going to last you roughly 12 years. And I said, now, if you'll just let me finance this at 7% and give you the same amount of money every month on my deal, with you carrying paper, there's going to be a difference here. Mine is going to last almost 27 years. Which one of those do you like? So it's a way of dealing and explaining. You have to sit with them and explain this stuff. That's how you do seller financing. Seller financing doesn't get done just because you wish it did.
Jay, we've got about 4 minutes left. Let's talk about how you got into education and what you love about it.
Well, I got into that. Here was my thought on that. I put a lot of time in the real estate business. And if I can get it down on a paper, the way I do it and my experiences and blend them together, there could be another round of profits in it for me. That was kind of my thinking.
Okay.
I might as well, you might say I'm getting 100% utilization out of my real estate experience, but not only I do it for myself, but if I can make money teaching it, writing books and so forth and so on, that's a whole new other arena there. And so I thought, well, we'll give this a try. And so I did, and somebody kind of, I started doing little seminars way back in the probably 82, 83. There was two or three big seminar companies, and they started calling me. My old friend Bill Nickerson, he said, well, you know, you need to get this guy up in Northern California. And that's how I really got started. But then I found I would have to develop, you know, some writings and start being able to teach this. So you have to get it down on paper. I will find that that is another total learning experience. And I know you know this yourself. When you're a teacher, you got to learn and look stuff up that you might have been winging for a few years, because you got to make sure what you're saying is right. So the teacher learns a lot more than the student. Isn't that true?
Yes, I think it is.
And so I got into it, and it was fascinating to me. And if could I sum it up by saying I might be a blabbermouth too?
What's now, when you and I were speaking over dinner, you were writing something. So that's how you write your books. You handwrite them.
I do. I handwrite them on yellow pads. I hate to admit this, Bruce. I don't use a computer at all. I just don't. It has no fascination for me. And now I've gotten old, and I only, you know, I always figure I got so much time left, and I'm not doing anything that I don't want to do. I made the comment, I'm now eating dessert first. So if there's anything left on the plate, it's going to be the vegetables. So, you know, I'm like a guy that wears a belt and suspenders. Both. I'm not taking no chances. And this lady say, so, you know, I do. I write longhand. And my gal, Kathy, who's been with my company here for 40 years, she gets it all lined up for me. And you know, McGraw-Hill, a huge company, you know, across the street from Wall Street there, you know, and I send them a manuscript run out of a Xerox machine in a paper bag.
I guess they must have liked the content. That's for sure.
They do. They do. They sold a lot of books for me, you know.
Jay, we're out of time. Will you give your website for me, please?
FixerJ.com. Okay. FixerJ.com.
Jay, I've enjoyed speaking with you. I got a big kick out of getting to know you that one night. So let's stay in contact. That'd be a lot of fun for me.
Okay. And if maybe we get into landlording sometime or some other part of this, and then, you know, different strategies I use, I'd be, you know, I love to kick those around with you. And so thank you, Bruce.
Okay, Jay. Thank you very much.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.